normalizing their relations with Israel. They said it is a great betrayal to all Muslims around the world.
It is clear that the normalization of relations with Israel is aimed at obtaining the praise of America and Israel. But the aggression happening today against the people of Gaza reveals the extent of their betrayal of the Palestinian cause and all Muslims.
Israel has renewed its attacks on the Gaza Strip and the West Bank in what has become the heaviest war against Palestinians over the past 7 years.
Holding up Palestinian flags, people here voice their solidarity with the Palestinian cause. They say the international community should hold Israel accountable for its war crimes and continued violation of the international law. Iyad Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Started a normalization phase after 3 weeks of lockdown. A 15-day long period of eased but not lifted restrictions has started in the country as daily numbers of new infected started falling. Due to the measures taken during the holy month of Ramadan, the numbers decreased from 60,000 per day to something near 10,000. Turkish president said the country hoped to overcome this pandemic as the new waves across the world has badly affected the situation in Turkey. He also stressed the importance of taking the vaccine to overcome this phase so that Turkey could go back to normal life soon.
Normalleşme adımlarını atıyoruz.
We start implementing our normalization calendar as of Monday. The restrictions will be eased in phases until the end of May and significantly as of June.
Experts say that the gradual normalization would not result in another increase in the numbers of daily infections. They also advise citizens to minimize their home visits to relatives and friends, as well as stay away from shopping malls and crowded areas.
The number of daily infection cases has reached a logical point, paving the way for easing the lockdown. We need to ease the lockdown to make a balance between containing the spread of the virus and allowing our people to go back to work and get prepared to welcome tourists. Our economy has been negatively affected with the lockdowns over the past year. We are trying to continue with the vaccination campaign. The government is now trying to get more vaccine jabs.
Most of the travel restrictions will be lifted, but nighttime and weekend curfews will remain in place, and restaurants will only open for food deliveries. With the new measures, Turkey hopes to compensate the economic losses it sustained over the past year. If tourists don't return to Turkish beaches this year, the nation's current account balance and lira are likely to be hit. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
In a rare show of strength, the opposition parties and the government joined hands in Pakistan's parliament to pass a unanimous resolution or what it said, unending war crimes against unarmed Palestinians by Israel. The parliament called on a 57-member bloc of Muslim countries, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or the OIC, to now undertake decisive steps to bring an end to ongoing unilateral war against innocent Palestinians. However, not very far from the parliament, the anti-Israeli protesters are not willing to trust OIC, given its track record of failures. The protests in Pakistan are expanding given the relentless bombing by Israel, killing Palestinians since last week when Israel imposed unilateral war on Gaza after it attacked the third holiest site of Islam in the occupied Eastern Jerusalem.
If their anger is not being expressed by the leadership of the Islamic world, I think they will go on their own. And I believe that an Arab Spring is about to restart. And this Arab Spring is not going to just remain to the Arab boundaries, but it will even come to Pakistan and beyond.
We want action against Israel!
These are Pakistani journalists. They are at pain over a growing scale of violence against international media networks and journalists in occupied Palestine by apartheid state of Israel. They protested and observed Black Day against Israel for killing innocent Palestinians and bombarding commercial infrastructure, housing international media networks, and Palestinian residents. International Federation of Journalists and Political Analysts point out that the frequency of the incidents with which journalists have been attacked with potentially a lethal force in the occupied Palestine indicates about the existence of a formal official policy to silence the media networks and journalists who are struggling hard to document the war crimes of Zionist state. However, so far, Israel has enjoyed impunity from all the war crimes it has committed against the unarmed Palestinian, given the fact it enjoys unconditional support from the US and other NATO allies in the Europe.
It only goes to show that the American moral power and European moral ascendancy also has limits. They are fast losing their moral authority to lecture the world on human rights.
More protests are planned on Friday when the clerics in hundreds of thousands of mosques and Islamic schools are expected to make anti-Israel speeches. Javed Rana, Islamabad. It is the beginning of a series of public protests in Pakistan over no let-up to the atrocities against Palestinians by Israel in the occupied land. Like elsewhere in the Muslim world, people are raging with anger in Pakistan since last week when Israel attacked Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied Al-Quds Sharif and later waged a unilateral war against unarmed Palestinians in Gaza. The Al-Aqsa is the third holiest Islamic site, the desecration of which by Israel has led to the beginning of a renewed wave of public anger against Israel in this part of the world. More protests have been planned to build a public pressure on government to stop ongoing attacks on unarmed Palestinians. Before protests like this one spread across the country, Pakistan has raised the issue in a virtual emergency meeting of Executive Committee of Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or the OIC, a 50-member bloc of Muslim countries.
There are no words strong enough to condemn the systematic and barbaric crimes against the Palestinians. The deteriorating conditions in the occupied Palestinian territories due to the illegal practices of Israel, the colonial policies and its continued aggression, siege, and collective punishment are sickening.
However, people attach little hope with the OIC, given its track record of doing little beyond issuing anti-Israel statements. People are particularly angry against the Muslim rulers, including their own, for restricting their official reaction so far to mere customary statements of condemnation, which they say is no longer acceptable to them. They want particularly Pakistan, Turkey and Iran to undertake concrete measures to prevent of what they call Israeli aggression at a time when many Arab countries have been allegedly siding with the apartheid state.
Our Prophet, peace be upon him, said that Muslim nation is just like the one body. If one part of it gets injured, the other part would feel its pain. Israel is committing atrocities on our children, brothers and sisters. It is obvious that we feel its pain. Our hearts beat with our Palestinian brothers. Pakistan and other Muslim countries now must declare a jihad against Israel.
The latest round of Israel's unilateral attacks started after Palestinians resisted the forcible eviction from their homes in the eastern Jerusalem Al-Quds. Since then, Israel has killed scores of Palestinians, including women and children, and injured many others. The housing and commercial infrastructure, including offices of international media houses in Gaza, have also been bombarded to silence the reporting of events from the occupied land. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Hundreds of Austrian protesters gather outside the office of Chancellor Sebastian Kurz, expressing their anger at the government's decision to take Israel's side as it continues its deadly bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip.
Protesters were not given legal permission for a large demonstration, but they did gather outside the Chancellery, expressing outrage at the fact that the Israeli flag has been hoisted on top of this building.
Organizers said that by raising its flag and expressing solidarity with Israel, the government has violated Austria's constitution.
Our main protest is we want this flag to be down because this flag is against our constitution. Our constitution stipulates neutrality, and our government takes side with a war party, with a party which violates systematically the rights of other people, of the Palestinians. They evict them, they ethnically cleanse them, they take their land.
Political commentators say Austria's one-sided political position runs contrary to the country's traditional policies founded on democracy.
This is unbelievable, and I'm sure that many of the Austrian people, because nobody was asked about this, this was a coup d'etat, this with the flag, and I'm sure that many of the Austrian people don't accept this. I'm here because we are siding the Palestinians, we are fighting their rights, but we are also protecting our rights as Austrian, as European Democrats.
We want the Palestinian people to know, and we want the Israeli government and the Austrian government to know that we will not be quiet, that we cannot be quiet down, and that the Palestinian people have a right on their land, and they have to stop this colonial expansion now.
Activists say they will continue their attempts to pile public pressure on the government and are calling on authorities to give them back their right to demonstrate. Momalevsky, Vienna.
Dock workers from the Italian-based union USB operating at the port of Livorno in northern Tuscany had planned to refuse to load a shipment of arms after discovering the load was headed to Israel. The shipment included explosives and precision-guided munitions destined for the port city of Ashdod in southern Israel. In a note, the USB union has explained that dock workers took the decision to stop loading the shipment, fearing the weapons would end up killing the innocent Palestinians already hit by deadly attacks over the past days, which caused hundreds of civilian victims, including women and children.
It's not right that our work is instrumental to the death of Palestinians. That's why we refuse to load the ship. We don't want to be part of this injustice. We don't want to be accomplices to the massacre of Palestinian civilians. Furthermore, we have noticed that an increasing number of shipments transiting through our ports are loaded with weapons, and this is very dangerous for us workers and for the people residing around the ports.
Dock workers had been tipped off by an NGO named the Weapon Watch over the weapons they were supposed to load onto the Asiatic Island, a vessel flying Singaporean flag docked at the port of Livorno.
The Weapon Watch is an independent observatory on arms transfers through Italian ports. According to a representative of the observatory, the legal part of the arms business transiting through Italy is mirrored by a vast illegal trade in arms that fuels violence, atrocities, and civil wars across the globe.
The truth is that these arms transfers are routine. Dock workers and the general population are now more aware of the direct consequences of these deadly loads since the media are reporting on the bombardments over the Gaza Strip.
The NGO The Weapon Watch has urged the Italian government to consider suspending some or all Italian military exports to Israel. Rome has recently halted the sale of thousands of missiles to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates due to their involvement in the Yemen conflict. Max Civili, Rome.
An Israeli airstrike destroyed a high-rise building in Gaza City that housed offices of some international and local media, along with residential apartments, as the escalation continues in the occupied territories. The strike came hours after Israeli jets targeted a Shatta'i refugee camp in western Gaza, killing 10 Palestinians, all of them women and children. Hamas said the attack is indicative of Israeli regime's helplessness in the face of Palestinian resilience.
At the time, the civilians, including the journalists, should have special protection during the crimes. Israel forces target the building where these buildings have press offices. It is an attempt to prevent the picture and what is going on. It is completely against the international law and the international human rights law.
Israel has ramped up its military aggression to include artillery and tank fire. The escalation has fed fears of a return to a long-term war between Israeli regime and Palestinian groups.
The previous nights were extremely horrible in all parts of the Gaza Strip, from the north to the south. We appreciate the significant role of our resistance front in defending us. This is all for Jerusalem al-Quds, and we won't give up.
This is a violation of the international law, and Israel should be held accountable to all these crimes. We are civilians, and Israel continues to target residential areas. Children are the main victims of these attacks.
Israeli warplanes struck multiple targets in Gaza overnight, while Palestinian resistance in response fired rockets into occupied lands by Israel. Observers here say that the main victims of these inhumane attacks against the Gaza Strip are civilians. Palestinians call on the international community to hold Israel accountable for this violation of international law. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Over 100,000 Londoners took to the streets of the British capital, London, denouncing the Israeli war crimes currently being committed and in remembrance of the Nakba Day, on which Palestinians remember the ethnic cleansing of 800,000 Palestinians from their lands by Zionist terrorists. The demonstrators marched on London's Israeli embassy, beginning from Marble Arch a mile away, gathering more demonstrators as they began to reach their final destination.
The streets of London taken over by pro-Palestine demonstrators, outraged at the massacres being committed in the Gaza Strip and Israel's crimes committed at Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan, and calling on their government to end all its support for what they call an apartheid regime.
Before, Israel used to attack parts of Gaza. Now they're attacking the whole of Gaza, and there's no way for them to hide.
It's now regarded by some people that you can't actually criticize Israel, that you can't call it apartheid. What I'm hoping is that after the appalling events in Gaza, which are taking place as we speak, that the size of this demonstration and hopefully many other demonstrations throughout the world will turn that round. It really needs to be understood how desperate the situations of the Palestinians is.
Demonstrations also took place throughout the country, with strong sentiment being voiced against the complicity of the UK's government in Israeli attacks on innocent Palestinian civilians.
We need to stop the oppression in Palestine. We need to stop the violence that's happening, killing so many innocent people. We need to stop. We need to give all the Palestinians their right.
The British government should listen to the Palestinians and think about what is right and what is wrong. An ethnic cleansing is wrong. And it's very clear now that that is what the Israelis want to do with the Palestinians. They are trying to drive them off their land so as to expand Israel.
Despite Israel's attempts to justify its violence, world public opinion, and specifically UK public opinion, seems to be shifting in favor of the Palestinian people and against Israel's war crimes. Robert Inlakesh, London.
Israel murderer, France complicit. That's the main slogan shouted by thousands of mainly young people in a march around Barbès, the popular north of Paris. The protesters voiced their anger over the crimes committed by Israel against the Palestinian people. The violation of the Al-Aqsa compound by Jewish settlers, the ethnic cleansing in Sheikh Jarrah, and the bombing of civilians in Gaza. And to make things worse, the march has been officially banned by the French authorities. because of fear of public disorder. The police officers confiscated the banners for Palestine.
The attitude of the French government is in the straight line of what it has always been, a colonial attitude. That's not surprising for us, except that the Palestinians are demanding the international community, thus also France, to denounce the war crimes of Israel, which are crimes against international law. So France is complicit to the colonial policy of annexation, of apartheid, and the criminal Israeli state.
The protesters challenged the ban of the French government in a pacific way. The only violence used was by police forces throwing tear gas grenades and using water cannons. The French authorities faced all imaginable difficulties to disperse the demonstrators because in this popular area of Paris, people came out of their houses to support the protests.
This march is banned because they say it could drain a lot of people from migrant neighborhoods. This is the pinnacle of a racist argument. It's a discriminatory and racist measure that harms fundamental rights in an incredible way.
In a press conference before the banned march, organizers denounced the ban and said they were willing to organize a common security force with the police to make sure the march could take place in secure conditions. But the French authorities refused.
The Interior Minister has made an amalgam with an anti-Semitic march. These are arguments to prevent the solidarity with the struggle of the Palestinian people. France always supports the colonial policy of Israel, while they should support the application of international law.
This year, the commemoration of the Nakba, the catastrophe, has coincided with the renewal of the uprising of the Palestinian people. Despite the ban in Paris, Palestinians can count on a lot of solidarity from France and the world.
The protesters demand the end of Israelis' attack against Palestinian people. They also blame the authoritarian drift of the French government. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The limelight.
The door is open for U.S. drone sales to authoritarian countries like the United Arab Emirates, says Sarah Sirota, reporter, in an article titled, After Slamming Trump, U.S. Lawmakers Silent on Biden Drone Export Policy. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. When the Trump administration announced last July it was loosening decades-old restrictions on military drone exports, the top Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee came out swinging. Progressive Democrats pounced and introduced legislation to reverse the decision. A new policy, they correctly warned, opened the door for sales to authoritarian countries like the United Arab Emirates that Democratic and Republican administrations alike had denied since the Reagan era. As we explore the repercussions of today's announcement on our broader foreign policy goals and our national security interests, Senator Robert Menendez said of the Trump administration's July 24th announcement, this reckless decision once again makes it more likely that we will export some of our most deadly weaponry to human rights abusers across the world. This is yet another reckless move by an administration fixated with eliminating the international cooperation. Now, in a real position to influence policy as chair of the committee thanks to two runoff elections in Georgia that few analysts expected would both result in Democratic victories, Menendez has been silent on the issue. Reuters report on March 25th that the Biden-led National Security Council is looking to keep the shift in place and eventually form a new international agreement to guide drone exports, enabling deals selling General Atomics MQ-9B drones to Taiwan and the UAE, which the State Department authorized in the twilight of Trump's presidency to proceed. It would be an extension of the decision made by the Trump State Department to no longer observe the International Missile Technology Control Regime's strong presumption of denial standard for exports of the most sophisticated drones on the market and instead invoke its national discretion. Reports such as Reuters often emerge as a trial balloon, testing whether a new policy will engender public pushback. This one didn't. The chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, an outspoken hawk, made no public statements in the wake of this news. No press releases, no rebukes on social media. That's despite the UAE's airstrikes against civilians in Yemen and Menendez's numerous criticisms of arms sales to the Emirates, as well as his notable effort in 2019 to block the Trump administration's attempt to greenlight billions of dollars in exports without congressional approval by declaring a national emergency. Concerns about the former president's drive to sell MQ-9s to the UAE also motivated a bipartisan group of senators to support a new bill in the weeks after the State Department announced the MTCR policy change that would counteract its aims. The bill, introduced by Senator Chris Murphy, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and co-sponsored by Senators Chris Coons, Mike Lee, Ron Paul, and Bernie Sanders, would prevent exports of sophisticated military drones, with an exception made for NATO members and other close allies. According to Juan Packen, a spokesperson for Menendez and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's Democratic majority, the panel's team has instead worked behind the scenes on the issue, telling The Intercept in an email recently, "The Senate Foreign Relations staff has in fact continued making several inquiries into the State Department regarding the MTCR policy change as it continues to be of great concern to Chairman Menendez." Packen said the inquiries were sent in the past few months but declined to share copies. The Democrats' dominant voice on foreign policy matters in the Senate didn't stick his neck out when his party's leader, finally in a position to reverse a reckless policy change, declined to do so, and neither did the rank and file. Indeed, no lawmaker who opposed the Trump administration's decision or called attention to the former president's extreme approach to arms sales has publicly derided the Biden-led White House's reported plan to continue authorizing exports of advanced military drones using its own discretion rather than a strong presumption of denial per MTCR guidelines. Murphy, Coons, and even Sanders, perhaps the Senate's most vocal critic of U.S. support for the war in Yemen, have stayed quiet. A congressional staffer told The Intercept in an email recently that Murphy does continue to have concerns about loosening restrictions on drone exports and has raised these concerns directly with the White House. The staffer did not immediately reply to a request for more detail about specific actions Murphy has taken, though. A spokesperson for Coons did not respond to an email about senator's position on the news report that Biden intends to preserve Trump's policy change. A spokesperson for Sanders did not provide a comment by press time. The stakes couldn't be higher. Not only did this policy change open the door to proliferation of some of U.S. most lethal spying capabilities, it undermined an important international framework for curbing the global spread of deadly cruise missiles. Especially given the Biden administration's intention to keep his predecessor's plan, the focus on economic competition rather than human rights or security may open the door to eventual leniencies on exports of increasingly destructive military capabilities like cruise missiles. Further, the State Department has not yet revealed whether the policy change allows cooperative development and production opportunities with customers' native manufacturers, which some trade advocates have pushed for. Meanwhile, American companies and trade groups have kept up their lobbying campaigns to influence policy. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, for example, lists unmanned aerial systems and the U.S. Conventional Arms Transfer Policy, or CATP, under which the Trump administration originally announced its intention to expand U.S. drone exports in 2018, as among its top lobbying issues in a filing with the House of Representatives for the first quarter of 2021. The Aerospace Industries Association also lists CATP as one of its core issues during the same time frame per a lobbying disclosure. During the first quarter, General Atomics had contracts worth tens of thousands of dollars with lobbying firm American Defense International, which would secure meetings on UAVs and foreign weapon sales, and Atlantic Strategies Group, which would gain support for foreign military sale funding for drones, according to public records. The Political Action Committee for the company has also donated thousands of dollars to Menendez.
The debate.
Hello and a warm welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm your host, Tahir Snajafi. The second week of Israeli aggression on Palestinian territories, sophisticated ordnances claim more than 210 Palestinian lives, almost half of them women and children. Palestinian resistance groups are also performing retaliatory attacks on Tel Aviv and other Israeli targets. They insist they will keep raiding Israel as long as Gaza and other Palestinian areas are coming under heavy Israeli land, navy, and air raids. And to debate you, we'll explore various aspects of the escalation with our panelists. Let's first go to our own correspondent in Gaza City, Ashraf Shannon, and see what update he has for us there. Ashraf, over to you.
Yes, Behrouz, the number of fatalities in the Gaza Strip because of the ongoing Israeli atrocities has risen to 213, and over 1,500 people have been injured, and as you mentioned, nearly half of them are children and women, and also large numbers of elderly people, and there are at least a dozen doctors and teachers and people from all professions were killed in this ongoing onslaught since 9 days ago. Israel continues to pound the enclave, Israeli Navy, gunboats, Israeli tanks, Israeli warplanes, using all kinds of weapons to attack over 2 million Palestinian civilians in the enclave. All the targets, or actually most of the targets that have been hit in Gaza, by the Israeli regime forces were civilian buildings and civilian infrastructure. Israel bombed at least three buildings known to house media companies, although dozens of other buildings also that were targeted had journalists in them. The health situation has reached a very critical point. The health, Ministry of Health is appealing for aid and surgical supplies to help take care of the wounded, especially amid of the coronavirus pandemic.
All right, thank you for that update, Ashraf Tanin in Gaza City. Take good care of yourself, Ashraf. Now, joining me are a couple of guests. We'll have historian and journalist Fresh Junkers out of Hasselt, Belgium. Also, international coordinator with the Samirian Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network, Charlotte Cates, is joining us from Vancouver. Good to have you both on the show. Beginning with Belgium, Fresh, Israel continues to pound Gaza. More than 200 Palestinians have been killed. So how do you size up this latest Israeli war on Palestinians, which is now in its second week?
Well, unfortunately, it is not a unique situation in as far as we're talking about, of course, Zionist attacks on Gaza and on the Palestinian people and the Palestinian nation in general. This has been part and parcel, of course, of the Zionist entity and the Zionist project since the very start, since 1948, and this has only gotten worse, of course, after the war of 1967, and ever since. And unfortunately, we have seen time and again in the last 20, 30 years that despite continuous diplomatical attempts and attempts at negotiations, that every so often there is a major war happening from the Zionist entity against Palestinian targets, especially very often tied to matters such as Israeli elections, whenever they need to get domestic attention away from internal problems, they turn on Palestinians, which is, of course, a victim that they always are more than willing to attack. Now, the difference, why this is, in a way, in a unique situation, is that the resistance and the resilience of the Palestinian people, which has always been very admirable and very successful in the fact that they continue to resist and continue to exist as a resilient and resistant people. But this resistance has kicked up a few notches, I think, in the past week or the past 9 days, in which you see not just the typical retaliation, but very, very precise and very successful retaliatory attacks. We have had missiles land in Tel Aviv, missiles land in near the Dimona nuclear weapons facility that Israel maintains in the Negev Desert. We have seen now reports surfacing of the Israeli Zionist offshore oil and gas platforms being targeted by remote control submarines. And now, of course, in the latest reports, we see that the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, which is the armed wing of Fatah in Ramallah, is starting to also, you know, take up arms and call for all-out revolutionary struggle. This is basically, I would call it, a third intifada forming and building up all across the Palestinian nation, which is a very hopeful symbol and a very hopeful signal that real lasting change and liberty to Palestine could indeed be around the corner, especially when you think about the fact that so far all of this resistance has been purely domestic. There has not yet been external support directly from Lebanon or from Syria, for example. Right. When this kicked off, the situation could get even could change even faster.
Over to Vancouver, Charlotte. The Biden administration just approved $735 million arms sale to Israel. What's the U.S. role? How big a role does the U.S. have in this Israeli onslaught against the Palestinians?
Well, the U.S. has a major role in the Israeli attack on the Palestinian people. And I mean, this, again, is also something that's not new. When Palestinians are fighting back against Zionist bombs and weaponry and the Israeli war machine, they're also confronting the full might and power of U.S. imperialism. And so it really shows that in many ways the Palestinian people and the Palestinian resistance are protecting humanity on the front lines. When we look at the U.S., every single year, the U.S. provides $3.8 billion a year in aid to Israel, and this aid is military aid. This is aid that is directly aimed at funding and supporting the Zionist war machine that is attacking Palestinians, occupying Palestinian land, and engaging in settler colonialism. If we look back from the beginning of the Zionist project, the Israeli state, the Israeli entity, was always seen as essentially kind of an aircraft carrier for imperialism, whether that was British colonialism or U.S. imperialism. And today, the U.S. is fully responsible for these crimes that are taking place, for the massacres that are taking place in Gaza. And that's why it is so important for people in the United States to take action, to demonstrate, to organize, to build the boycott movement, and to hold political officials accountable and make it clear that all U.S. aid to Israel must stop immediately and that sanctions must be imposed on the Israeli entity.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bresht, the United States says also this is not the only thing that it has done. It's also blocked the U.N. Security Council meeting or any action or statement on the Israeli war on Gaza. We had the Palestinian envoy to the UN just an hour ago in a presser there. He said that they tried so hard, there were consensus. There was only one country, meaning the U.S., that has stopped this meeting from happening. Now they're asking for a General Assembly meeting and all that, and a lot of countries are supporting it. So, and the U.S., he said that they promised to do something undercover to stop this Israeli aggression, but that didn't happen either.
Yeah, well, no, of course, this is a very, it's when I read the information and the developments of the United States intervention in the UN Security Council and trying to block any and all, even theoretical condemnation, even if it's just verbal, just in words, condemnation of the Zionist aggression. Again, this is unfortunately nothing new and unfortunately nothing shocking, but at the same time, that's why I say it's a bit of a double story, because at the same time, in terms of, especially when we're talking about Palestine and about the oppression of the Palestinians by Zionism, the United Nations has very often been somewhat of a paper tiger, a toothless lion, so to say, in which they have never really done much to really help the Palestinian people. In fact, unfortunately, it was one of the first acts that the United Nations took as an organization was the creation of the Zionist entity on the top of Palestine. Of course, back then, this was with a very limited amount of membership, which was mostly dominated by the West. But still, and even ever since then, the United Nations has, of course, denounced, after the war of 1967, the Zionist illegal settlements in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem and on Gaza and the occupation of the Sinai and the Golan Heights. But when push comes to shove, there has been very little work done by the United Nations, and one of the major reasons for that being, of course, the undemocratic functioning of the United Nations Security Council, in which one permanent member can block everything. Even if the entire world were to unite in the United Nations, the United States alone could still block this with its veto power. And the same goes for France and the United Kingdom, who are also two major pillars of Zionism in Europe. So this is an unfortunate situation to be in, and that's why I feel bad in a way for the Palestinian representatives in the United Nations, because some of these diplomats are probably very sincere believers in the negotiated solution, but they are getting slapped over and over again with the impossibility of their job and the impossibility of their mission. And I believe that in the end, you will see, as has been shown so often in the past, in times of when dealing with oppression, when dealing with imperialism and colonialism, is that the only option to solve this is resistance. Even in terms of South Africa, which for a major part was indeed where a part it was brought down by international pressure. This international pressure only came as a result of decades of internal resistance and revolutionary struggle led by people such as Nelson Mandela. Only after that, after 20, 30 years of resistance, the United Nations and the international community finally decided to step in and impose sanctions. But this is very, very unlikely, unfortunately, to be done, these sanctions to be applied on Israel. So at this point, I pin my hopes not so much on the UN, but on the internal resistance of the Palestinian people that will, in the end, put the Zionists for the fact that they will have no option but to pack their bags and leave.
Okay. Now, Charlotte, what's your perspective on this? I mean, the responsibility of international organizations, UN being one of them, and also that of the international community in the midst of all this savagery that we're witnessing against the Palestinians.
Yes, well, I mean, it's very unfortunate to note that, you know, it's certainly in recent years and much to date, the United Nations has been effectively blocked or controlled or dominated by the United States and fellow imperialist powers, especially in Europe and Canada and elsewhere. That being said, it's absolutely necessary on a popular level for people around the world. And if we look at the streets of, you know, every major city, and not just major city, but small towns and villages around the world, we're seeing tens and hundreds of thousands and even millions of people globally taking to the streets and carrying the Palestinian flag as a symbol of humanity, resistance, solidarity, in justice over injustice. And so when we see these massive demonstrations everywhere around the world standing with Palestine, that what we need to do is to translate that sentiment and that solidarity into action and into accountability. And that means struggling and organizing in the United States, in Europe, in Canada, in Australia, elsewhere, to do everything that we can to tie the hands of imperialism and struggle within the belly of the beast to stop these crimes that are taking place against the Palestinian people. That's one reason why, I mean, when we say boycott Israel, yeah, this is just a kind of a small action for individuals to take. But the more the international isolation of Israel grows, the more that we are able to provide real and meaningful support to the Palestinian resistance, who are the actors that are actually making this victory of the Palestinian people possible. And so when we talk about boycott, demonstrating, organizing, we're not talking about an alternative to the resistance. We're talking about the international support that is important to support this Palestinian, Arab, and international struggle for justice and accountability. And that includes holding accountable the United Nations and the representatives that are refusing to take action and are allowing massacres to continue to be perpetuated against the Palestinian people. And despite the fact that there are pages and pages and pages of UN resolutions on Palestine that have never been implemented, and that essentially the United States forced the withdrawal of the resolution recognizing that Zionism is racism, the fact is that Zionism is racism, and this has been recognized by the vast majority of the world. And the fact is that Palestinians have the right to resist, have the right to engage in armed struggle, just like all colonized people fighting occupation and oppression. And this has been recognized. This is a fundamental part of international law. And so applying international law in Palestine means supporting Palestinian resistance. It means supporting the liberation of Palestine, and it means putting an end to colonialism.
Okay. Now, Bryce, regarding this worldwide condemnation of Tel Aviv and its aggression against Palestinians growing, and Charlotte just mentioned a number of the instances, rallies in support of Palestinians all over the world, even in the Western world, in Europe, in Paris, Rome, elsewhere, in the U.S., San Francisco, Washington, Boston, elsewhere, you had people out there, and this is getting louder and louder. And does this mean, is this an indication of, let's call it a PR defeat for Tel Aviv and Washington's agenda for the Palestinians?
I think we're definitely seeing a change. We're not quite there yet, I believe, because, of course, the Hasbara agenda, the agenda of Zionist and the practice of Zionist propaganda is still extremely strong, and they influence, have a huge influence on the political system, especially in Western Europe and North America. And they continue, of course, to have a very active social media presence that still spreads a lot of misinformation. But indeed, as indeed has been said by the other guest, there is a growing amount of activism. And indeed, not just in the bigger cities, but also in the small towns. We were speaking, for example, here in Belgium, even smaller towns, just places with a couple of thousand inhabitants, have their own small rallies pro-Palestine coming up also in the coming few days. So these are rallies of people who, in many cases, these are people who never really participated much in let's say, in long-standing pro-Palestine or anti-Zionist campaign. These are people who are not necessarily ideologically committed to any specific ideology, but they feel deep down that there is a great and grave injustice being done. Of course, when I say we're not quite there yet, there is still a lot of work that needs to be done because there still remains a major, idea that still exists in the West of a quote-unquote, both sides are bad, that idea in which they believe that both sides should put down their arms and negotiate, which is a very idealistic way of thinking, considering that the Palestinians have been trying for the past 73 years and it hasn't really gotten them anywhere. But still the fact that people start to understand that a certain form of resistance is logical, that a certain form of rebellion and revolutionary sentiment of the Palestinian people is a logical next step to take, and that Israel needs to back off and needs to withdraw and needs to basically needs to pedal back on its idea of establishing a ethno-state for what they consider to be the Jewish race. There is a lot of popular sentiment nowadays that says, you know, this sort of ethno-state system is not of this time. It is not something that we can accept any longer. It is in violation of international law, of common human decency. So when I see that happening, that fills me with a certain sense of optimism that a lot of people across the West, they defy their political leaders, because all across Western Europe, with the possible exception of Ireland, the political elite is staunchly pro-Zionist, including here in Belgium. There have been constant apologetics for the bombing of Gaza, constant misinformation campaigns trying to blame everything on Hamas. But the people are starting to get fed up with these lies and start to get fed up with these, let's say, these idiotic attempts to justify mass murder. That's when you see people come to terms with the fact that this is a struggle not just against Israel in particular, but that it's part of a wider anti-imperialist struggle, anti-colonial struggle, that is part of the modern society if you want the country to be independent and to be free. So that is why it has been said that this is it's a hopeful development that I hope will continue in the near future.
Okay. We have only 1 minute left, Charlotte. Let's also take a look at the way that some Arab states have acted. They not only they kept their deafening silence against all these atrocities by the Tel Aviv regime. They even turned their back and they normalized, they kind of signed that so-called normalization deals with the Tel Aviv regime. What makes them do that? We have only 1 minute.
Unfortunately, many reactionary Arab regimes are in the pocket of U.S. imperialism, but I think that one thing is very clear. This current uprising is putting an end once and for all to the project of Arab normalization with Israel. They believe that they would be able to pass this, that they would be able to elevate their collaboration to a public level against Palestine. But what has happened is this situation is redirecting the compass of the region towards Palestine and towards liberation and towards confrontation of Zionism and imperialism against all of the attempts to alter the situation, to instead force Arabs to fight against one another in the interest of imperialism. People are recognizing the real enemy and the real struggle that has to be fought, and normalization and the project of normalization is on the road to its ultimate defeat.
Okay, thank you very much for your comments and contribution. Historian and journalist Bresch Jonkers in Hasselt, Belgium. International coordinator with the Summit on Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network, Charlotte Cates in Vancouver, joined us with their contribution and insights.